Welcome to the Progress Your Health podcast with your hosts, Dr. Robert Mackey and Dr. Valerie Davidson, a husband and wife team who specialize in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy and functional medicine. They're here to help you lose weight, balance hormones, and age gracefully. It's their mission to motivate, educate, and empower you to take your health to the next level. And now your hosts, hormone experts, Dr. Mackey and Dr. Davidson.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson.
And thank you for listening to another episode of the Progress Health Podcast. We have some, actually, we've been getting lots of questions, which we really do appreciate. We've been kind of talking about the Ask the Doctor situation. Name and email, just enter your question there.
On our website.
Yeah, website, progresshealth.com. The tab was down at the bottom. Now it's going to be up at the top by the time you listen to this. Just a way to simplify where the questions come from. This has kind of been our format ever since we started. And I think it's a great way for you and I to have an unlimited amount of topics to talk about.
Absolutely. I think the questions are great. If any of you have a question, that means a whole bunch of other people out there have that same question. So it's one way that we can help everybody.
Yeah. And honestly, when we started this podcast, I mean, we know that this information, the specifics about hormone replacement is really hard to find, really hard to get the answers, which is why we started this podcast in the first place. And when it comes to menopause and perimenopause, it can be a little bit of a minefield as far as getting the help and the support that you want. So again, we appreciate everybody listening. We appreciate everyone sending in their questions. So today we have a question from Donna. Why don't you go ahead and read her question?
Okay, so this question is from Donna. Good morning. I am 63 and postmenopausal. I was from age 50 to 58 on a combo bioidentical hormone, biased, not sure the dose, and progesterone 200 milligrams. A few years ago, the doses were dropped to Prometrium 100 milligrams and biased 0.375 milligram troche 4 days a week. My doctor isn't interested in bioidentical hormones, so I've had to instruct myself. Now, at 63, I am, quote unquote, reasonably well, but some vaginal atrophy, dryness, still some moodiness, and bad sleep. I tried stopping and got really weird emotionally. I tried estriol cream, but it's messy, and Prometrium 100 milligrams. Thinking about going back on the troches and Prometrium, I was going to try estradiol patches, but your podcast made me reconsider. Any advice, please? With kind regards, Donna.
Yeah, so there's a, I mean, that's a very specific question, something that we've seen before from other people. You know, their doctor changes, you know, she from 50 to 58, she's now, actually, let me back up a second. She put in parentheses there. She put menopause at 35. I don't know if you read that part.
Oh, no, I didn't. I kind of wanted to go into that a little bit. I thought it might be a little bit confusing. You know, menopause is, you know, the average age of menopause is 51.5. There are some women that go through early menopause that might be in their 40s. I kind of thought when I read this question that perhaps Donna may have went into more like perimenopause at 35, because having, as we've said in previous podcasts, I think one or two prior to this one, ovarian failure is not that common. So I'm thinking maybe 35, she was having more perimenopause and then transitioned into menopause because she said at age 50, she was taking the bioidentical hormones. I'm sure she wasn't taking bioidentical hormones at 35.
Yeah, right. Well, that's why, or maybe hysterectomy maybe at 35. I mean, that'd be surgical,
you know,
she's menopause.
She's pretty detailed here. I think if she had had a hysterectomy, she probably would have said,
yeah,
so.
Probably right. So that's why I'm a little surprised by that.
Yeah, so I kind of left that out. I'm thinking that's probably more perimenopause at 35. And then she went into menopause at 50. And here she is at 63, postmenopausal.
Yeah. Well, regardless, from 50 to 58, she was on what seemed like, she doesn't say that it was bad, but she was doing fine because she's on it for 8 years. And then all of a sudden her doctor decides to change her dose. What do you think about changing the dose? Is that warranted? Is that a good idea? Is that a bad idea?
Well, it depends on what doctor you're going to. So let's say you're on one doctor, they have you on this particular dose, and then you go see another doctor. They're not familiar with it. And trust me, I've had plenty of patients in our entire career, of course, that have come in, went to another doctor, and they didn't really know even what biased was, you know. So, and I've had patients that I have them on hormones, and then, you know, because everybody has their healthcare team, and they might go to their gynecologist, go to their GP, go to their internist, and then I'll see on some of the notes of their other doctors, or even go to the emergency room for a UTI, when they're writing down the medication list in these electronic health records, they don't have biased. Even in our electronic health records does not have the word biased. So a lot of times they'll have even, you know, just kind of what sort of like random medication estrogen, like it, they don't know what to put on there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so, they have no idea what it is.
So I think, so just to kind of back up for those of you that are listening, anybody that's new might be wondering exactly what a biased is. A biased is a bioidentical hormone replacement. It can come as creams, troches, capsules, lots of different modes of taking it. But biased is a combination of estriol, E3, and estradiol. So it looks like, you know, Donna was taking that biased combination of estriol and estradiol plus progesterone, 200 milligrams. She says here she wasn't sure what that biased dose was, but then the doctor dropped her dose and then also dropped her progesterone. So I'm thinking she went to a new doctor. Doctor didn't really know what it was, because like I've said many podcasts, you know, GPs and internists, you know, can't be the jack of all trades. They can't do hormone replacement and everything.
Well, then you shouldn't be prescribing it in the first place then. If you're not the jack of all trades, you shouldn't be dabbling in hormones. And now granted, I thought when I read this the doctor dropped the dose because of the 7-year rule that they about sometimes. You know, you've been on them for 7 years, which is a conventional recommendation. You can only be on hormones for 7 years and then you're supposed to stop. We don't adhere by that. I don't think that that's a rule that anyone that prescribes bioidentical hormones on a regular basis does not follow that rule.
No, I mean, on conventional hormones, now anybody that had been on the Premarin and Prempros, you know, from years ago, yeah, you don't want to be on those medications for very long.
Well, I think that's where the rules sort of came from.
So now they're attributing that to biased, which, you know, in my opinion, and I have lots of women, and we've been doing bioidentical hormone replacement for 20 years, over 20 years, is you can do bioidentical hormone replacement your whole life. As long as you're being treated by, you know, a practitioner that knows what they're doing, they look at your levels, they're looking at your blood work, they're looking at your labs, they're looking on how you're doing in particular, you're doing other screening, you can be on that for the rest of your life. But I could see where some of these conventional hormones, which are technically bioidentical, like, you know, Donna's talking about the patch, they seem to be a little bit different. They're a lot stronger. That even something like that, I would say you probably don't want to be on that for the rest of your life, like a patch or these conventional ones. Maybe I'm not even Prometrium. I'm still a little, I like Prometrium. It's considered a big box type of progesterone prescription, but I still have some issues with that when it comes to treating patients.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot of fear about hormones. The older a woman gets, the more kind of leery people get about continuing to prescribe them. And I think that's all for naught. That's still based on old information. We've just did a couple of podcasts about the bones and the heart, and we're going to do one about the brain,
which we'll get to.
Yeah. You know, those are really important things that women want to feel, men want to feel that way too. Men want to feel good, in the short term as well too. But you're kind of doing two different things. You're providing symptom relief in the short term, but you're also setting them up for future success as a way to stave off all that age-related disease, as opposed to thinking that hormones are going to cause cancer. Okay, hormones don't cause cancer. Female hormones do not cause cancer. Okay, now, lumping all hormones into the same bucket, okay, which is one thing that has happened over the last 20 plus years. I think that's where it's hard to separate the wheat from the chaff. It's hard to separate which ones are safe, which ones are not. And you're totally right. There is a little bit of, even though they're still bioidentical, there's still a little bit about, a little bit of skepticism about some of those, if anything, like the patch, for example, like the delivery mechanism, like, you know, 0.075 milligrams. We both know that is a, you know, pretty hefty dose for the most part.
That can be quite a bit stronger than a biased. So when somebody is switching, so I'm glad that Donna listened to our previous podcast. I'm not sure what episode it was, that she's on a, honestly, a looking at what she's at on currently, because she went, it's a pretty low dose, actually an incredibly low dose compared to switching over to a patch. So if Donna had went on a estradiol patch, even the lowest one, they're like apples and oranges when you're comparing bias to an estradiol patch. She would probably get really tender breasts, sensitive nipples, maybe even some fullness. She would probably gain 6 pounds. Most of it would be water weight, but she'd gain some weight. She wouldn't feel good. She'd probably feel like she was on some kind of PMS because it's going from terrible, you know, this kind of low dose to this higher dose. She would feel like terrible permanent PMS or something.
Yeah. And I, you know, it doesn't say in the beginning, you know, the 1.5 milligrams divided over 4 days. So I think you did the math. We figured out it's like 0.375 milligrams per, but she's doing a troche, which is just a sublingual delivery method. I mean, that right there, sort of, it's confusing to me, right? It's confusing as to why that would be the, I'd be interested to know what her original dose was, and then why it was, and why it was changed to that. Like, you know, a lot of these things, if you do write questions later on to us, please put down what your dosing is, because that is, it all comes down at the most point, it comes down to the dosing form and the dose itself. That really makes a big difference as far as how a woman's going to feel.
And if you're not sure what the dose is, just whatever's on your container, just write it down verbatim. We can easily figure out. I know sometimes they have like these P's and this 0.025 plus this, and it just looks like a bunch of, you know, jarble.
Letters and numbers.
And numbers. Just write them down. We know exactly what that means because it does help. What Dr. Mackey was saying is kind of what I think too, is I think the doctor dropped her doses down because she was 58 years old and said, you don't necessarily need to be on hormones. Let's start to wean you off. I think that was probably the general idea.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. That's what I got from it. Now the idea, I think that hormone replacement can be done every day. It does not need to be done 4 days a week. I would guess that her doctor is probably, you're probably a man, right? Now, granted, I do dumb things. I'm a dumb man myself, right? But this, the dosing she's on right now just doesn't make any sense to me. And clearly she feels worse than she did before. She must have, like I said, for that 8 years, she must have felt fairly fine. So I'm not really sure why the big change. I still don't like the troche idea, though. I think the troche, you know, she'd probably do much better with a higher dose of a cream, right? It'd probably stabilize her emotionally. Of a bias cream. But the dose would have to be much higher than, 1.5 milligrams. It'd have to be...
Yeah, divided by 4 days. So 0.375, maybe she's taking it Monday through Thursday and then taking...
Or every other day, something. I don't know. It makes no sense.
I can understand, I am hesitant occasionally with troches. I have a few patients with troches and I keep a good eye on them because it's technically, like Dr. Mackey said, as you put it, it's sublingual. You put it inside your cheek, it's supposed to dissolve and you absorb it sublingually, but there still is going to be an oral absorption that way because, it's going to get into your saliva and you're going to swallow it. So anything with an estrogen, whether it's an estradiol, especially an estradiol, or an estriol, a biased, I don't like to use that orally just because it's really hard on the liver. The absorption system isn't, absorb it as well. We like to do it as a transdermal cream. So I think just like what you're saying, Dr. Mackey, is doing the, for Donna, is doing a biased at a, at a good dose every day, most likely twice a day, because I like to do it morning and evening because the bias doesn't stay in your system that long when you do it just once a day. So twice a day, using it as a cream, I think she would get a lot more relief from that.
Yeah. Now she did mention that she tried estriol cream. So someone is, she's doing biased and an estriol. So someone obviously is using a compounding pharmacy. So she's at least aware of, because those things are not commercially available.
No, she said estriol, not estradiol.
Yeah,
estriol.
Yeah. Well, like I said, up above in the question, it says biased mm-hmm. Permetrium and then estriol. So she is using it looks like both a big box pharmacy for the Permetrium and then a compounding pharmacy for the biased and estriol. Now she did say that one of her main, she feels fine, okay, not great, but fine. But her main issues are, vaginal atrophy and dryness. You cannot address that orally, right? Even transdermally, like, you know, we always tell women to use their bias cream on the inner thigh. You know, that is going to introduce the hormones systemically. That still won't have an impact on the vaginal issues.
It can, but really it's like those poor little vaginal cells are last in line for the estrogen, that by the time they get up to that, you know, the buffet line to get the estrogen, there isn't any left. So you're right. I do think doing it, you know, doing it systemically as a bias is a great idea, but then also using the estriol cream. And I know she says it's messy, but honestly, I don't find estriol messy at all.
Well, like what we do though, again, this might be the issue, is we increase the concentration, right? So let's just use an example. So we do, for estriol specifically, we use that on the face as a anti-wrinkle cream, and or we use it on the vagina as a, you know, vaginal atrophy dryness cream. We always use roughly a 2 milligram per gram concentration.
Sometimes, yeah, 2, or I'll go up to 4. I'll even go up to 5. I have some people I go up
I'm
to 6.
I'm just saying most of the time. Okay. Let's not make it complicated. Most of the time.
Okay. I usually
you're
do.
Not going to start someone you just met as a new patient. You're going to start them on 5 or 6. You've built up to that over time. But as a starting point, you're going to start at, you know, actually, I'm sorry. We do 4 milligrams per gram.
Yeah.
I apologize. We do 4 milligrams per gram, and then each application they're applying a half. That's what I meant to say. They're using a half a gram of cream. So if you're using a Topiclic, it's just 2 little twists. Half a gram of cream comes out, and it's 2 milligrams. So it's 2 milligrams an application. So you're right. You could go 4, 5, 6, because if they're using it more often than roughly, you know, let's say they've been using it for a while. What's the maximum you'd want them to use it per week? How many
Usually
times?
They only need to use it 2 to 3 times a week when you're using it for vaginal atrophy.
Right.
And after a while, it builds up because those little vaginal cells go from being parabasal cells, which are immature vaginal cells. They upregulate that estrogen, the estriol, and then they become mature vaginal cells. After a while, some women only use it once a week or once every other week.
Right.
So it really depends, you know, with timing. But when you're using, like you were mentioning, a half a gram or 2 clicks on a Topiclic, that's not a lot of cream.
Well, we do it that way on purpose, though. We increase the concentration so they can use less cream, so it's quote unquote not messy.
Yeah, so I'm thinking maybe Donna got one that had, maybe she had to use like a whole gram. Maybe a whole gram could be, even a whole gram is not that much cream, but maybe that could be messy putting it on your vaginal tissues. It can come with an applicator too. You don't have to use it as a Topiclic. You can actually get it as an applicator that you insert kind of like a tampon. And that's not super messy either. So I'm thinking that she just had to apply a lot of cream, or maybe they were telling her to use it every day. I usually don't have women use estriol vaginally every day unless they're just starting out and they have pretty extensive atrophy or dryness. Then I might have to use it for a full week or 10 days and then back off to twice a week to maybe even once a week.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Or you can also use, if the cream is messy, you can also have the compounding pharmacy created into a suppository, which the suppository, you know, they use beeswax and some kind of a base. I don't think they technically use beeswax at the compounding pharmacy, but something that is similar to beeswax. So it hardens, but at body temperature, when you insert it in the body, it's going to melt very easily. So that could probably get a little messy, but, you know, those are really the, when you're dealing with that localized of an issue, it has to be applied locally, right? You have to have it some kind of interface between the, you know, the estriol itself and those vaginal tissues in order to have the impact. But to your point, a little bit more frequency in the beginning, but then again, 1 to 3 times a week thereafter is usually all. If they're using it more than 3 times a week, then like you said, then the concentration goes up a little bit, and now they're able to use it less often.
You can use it, this is a complete tangent, you could use it more often during the week if you're using it more for stress incontinence. So because the estriol does tonify the urethra, so it does help with any kind of stress incontinence, you know, when you cough and there's a little urine leakage, or some women, you know, they have urine leakage that they have to wear a little panty liner or a pad every day. So then I say, oh, let's try that estriol, see if we can tonify up that urethra. And usually I end up doing higher doses, even between 6 to 8 milligrams of estriol, and then doing that maybe about 3 times a week. That seems to help.
Yeah. But still, you're not, the point is that you're still not using it every day.
No, you don't. No. That would be a lot of work. I mean, there's a, as ladies, I understand we're kind of high maintenance. You got to brush your teeth, you got to floss, you got to wash your face, you got to put on your serums and creams, doing an estriol every day. That's just, you know, that's just more things to do.
Well, I meant more from a safety perspective, you know, like, you know,
I wouldn't say there's any
spotting or bleeding, anything like that.
No, because estriol isn't going to thicken the lining of the endometrial lining. Estradiol will absolutely, you apply estradiol, your vaginal tissues, that will cause thickening of the endometrial lining, especially if you use it every day. But estriol doesn't have that effect on it. I think there's something with the receptors in the endometrial lining, the alpha and the beta receptors or something. Estradiol stimulates one of the receptors to cause thickening of the lining, but estriol doesn't. I can find that. I have some research literature on that because that was a concern back in the beginning when I was, you know, thinking about using estrogen vaginally for vaginal atrophy. Is you don't want to do anything that's so close to the uterus to cause that endometrial lining to thicken inappropriately. So that's where, yeah, I don't even like the estradiol commercial ones like VagiFem and the different ones that people use. Premarin cream is still out there to be used vaginally. Don't like that at all.
Yeah.
The estriol, I think, is a much better choice. It's just, like you said, have a compounding pharmacy, make it a little stronger, and then Donna can apply it, and it probably twice a week. She probably only needs it twice, maybe once or twice a week, and it probably would completely help with that vaginal atrophy and dryness.
Yeah, so anytime you're doing a compounding prescription like that, which, of course, that's more on the doctor's side to be able to figure those things out, you know, in some situations, doctors might not realize so the prescription is written as certain amount of milligrams per gram. Well, you double the amount of milligrams, you know, let's just use a crazy example, 10 milligrams. I've done this for someone with testosterone, raise the concentration of the testosterone up to, like, say 10 milligrams or 12 or 14. But now they're only using it once a day. So only you have to use 2 milligrams, 2 clicks or the half a gram, but they're still getting a 4, 5, or 6, 7 milligram amount with using less cream. The whole point of that is for them to use less cream. So, you know, my guess is when she says it was messy, that it was more than likely she was using the full gram. Maybe not, she didn't say anything about frequency, but, like you said though, you know, one to three days a week is pretty much all you need. And that usually solves that issue. Now, once you're in your late 50s, in your 60s and beyond, you stop the cream, the issue is going to come back. Okay. There's no way around that. Unfortunately, that's why you have to have a little bit of maintenance there, a little bit of frequency over time. Otherwise, the tissues just kind of revert back because there is no estrogen on board anymore, which is, you know, part of the problem.
Yeah. So even some women that aren't on hormone replacement, but they have the atrophy, then you can just use the estriol vaginally to help with any vaginal dryness or vaginal atrophy. I would say one thing that you mentioned too, and I get this question all the time now that it's kind of pinging in my head here, is, you know, you have patients on hormone replacement, you have them on the HRT, and they ask, well, if I, you know, am I over menopause, can I stop these hormones now? And that's not really the issue. I understand when a woman first goes into menopause, so 51 and a half, they're getting a lot. Some women are really getting terrible night sweats. They're changing their jammies, they're sleeping on a towel, they're getting horrible hot flashes during the day, they're having trouble at meetings, they're forgetting things. Then yeah, the hormones are a nice bridge to soften that, but it doesn't mean that you take it away and you're back to your normal self. It's meaning you still don't have the hormones in your body. You stop those hormones, you know, you're taking them, you stop them, you're going to get some symptoms back.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. And that is what we, you know, women say, well, how long can I stay on these? And we can tell them it's kind of up to you. It's up to you and your body, what your body will allow you to do. If you can, I've had plenty of women over the years that have wanted to stop. They try to stop and their body won't let them stop, right? Because their body, a woman's body, just like a man's body wants testosterone, a woman's body wants estrogen. And I wouldn't call it a withdrawal effect necessarily. Like, you know, you're withdrawing from caffeine or something. There's no addiction there. It's not really quite how it works. But your body's responding to the presence of those hormones in a very positive way. And you take that hormone away. Now, granted, there could be a little window if you did stop the hormones, you know, because you're quote unquote postmenopausal. We were talking about that the other day. Like, what is the difference between menopause and postmenopause? I mean, is there really even such a transition? I don't really think there is.
I think menopause can be more like a phase when they're having a lot of those active symptoms.
Right.
We wanted to get into the numbers, like their follicle stimulating hormone, their FSH might be around, you know, 50 to 80, but postmenopause means that they have, you know, they are past that phase. Their FSH might be up there at 110, 120, but they, you will notice that those symptoms do sort of start to minimize after a few years of being in menopause.
For some.
Yeah, they'll start, like the like I said, sleeping in, you know, changing your jammies and sleeping on the towels are going to start to minimize. That's not as much. So when somebody asked me, like you had mentioned, you know, how long do I need to be on these hormones? I tell them you can be on them as long as you want, as long as we do it in a proper manner. But at the same time, everybody has different goals. You know, everybody has different goals on what hormone replacement means to them. That there are some women that we get over that horrible hump of the night flat, you know, the night sweats, the hot flashes, the brain fog, the dry skin. We get over that, and then we start to wean them off, and then we kind of see how they do. There's other women that really, you know, hormones are good for your hair and your skin. They, you know, they're looking at it more of an anti-aging respect. Other women, osteoporosis, bone density issues run huge in their family, that the hormones might be providing, you know, help towards their bone density. You know, everybody has a different goal. Some women, it's just about the libido, which I get. That estrogen drops, that libido goes right out the door.
Oh, yeah. I have a few that they do rhythmic dosing. Now, static dosing, which will, you know, that's what we're talking about here, is some version of static dosing. I'm not going to do too much on the, you know, on the libido side. It can, but it doesn't typically. If you're trying to have more of an impact on libido, you know, you need an appropriate dose, you know, and the right combination. And what one combination that works for one woman isn't going to work for the next five. You know, that's the challenging part about trying to improve a woman's libido, is that there's not one size fits all. You're just going to give them a certain milligram amount and their libido is going to come back. Like, you know.
No, like I said, it ends up on the goals. So if somebody says, I say, what are your goals with working with hormone replacement? And they say, I want everything. Well, let's start with something. Let's get rid of the night sweats so that you can sleep better. Then we work from there. The libido thing, like you said, can be quite an issue because us ladies are so complicated. I wish it was as simple. Here, take this and your libido will go through the roof. That'd be awesome. But really, I think it's a combination of what we're going to, I guess you could say, like for Donna, for example, let's say she was talking about low libido. She would have one particular dose of like a bias progesterone, maybe some testosterone in there. We work on her adrenals. And then somebody else that has a libido issue might have a completely different dose just because they're a different person.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And that's why, like I said, sometimes when libido is that important, which I think it's important for everyone, to some extent, but that's where rhythmic dosing sometimes does a little bit better job of kind of restoring, that sex drive. So let me see what else is on here that is interesting.
It's all really interesting. I liked this one because there was aspects about how long can I be on hormone replacement, all the different types, you know, between, you know, the estradiol patch. I wouldn't say you'd want to be on that one for the rest of your life, but you could be on like a biest as long as it was, you know, being monitored. We talked a little bit about why is, you know, like she says, my doctor isn't interested in bioidentical hormones, probably because he's a primary care and he's doing a whole lot of other things. So I instructed myself. So that's what Donna said, is I instructed myself. I've said this before on other podcasts. You listeners know more about your hormones and about hormone replacement and about, you know, perimenopause and menopause than your doctor probably does. That's kind of one of the sad facts about, you know, about perimenopause and menopause, is we have to be our own advocates.
Yeah. That, I mean, honestly, that's the reason why we're doing the podcast, mm-hmm. is because a few episodes ago, maybe I was talking to a patient. When I was in school, I never thought I would be doing female hormones on a regular basis. But that's sort of what the market dictates, right? You know, you get women coming in, having problems to solve. And as a practitioner, you just sort of help them where they are. And you just sort of figure some things out, you know, so. And I know you've been doing that right from the get-go, and rightly so, because we are sort of at the beginning of that bioidentical hormone, I wouldn't call it a revolution necessarily, but I would call it something that has transpired over the last 25 years, maybe a little longer than that. I think bioidentical hormones were probably from the late 90s, you know, technically, but really started to ramp up after, as we've mentioned a few times, the WHI study, Women's Health Initiative study. That's when it all changed in the early 2000s. And we've been in practice ever since. So we've been able to see this really nice progression. Still way behind the times, still not conventionally accepted necessarily. It's very, there's no real, that's sometimes the problem in medicine. Medicine wants to have very specific treatment options. That's why there's 1 to 3 doses for every disease there is. But hormone replacement, like you said, this doctor in this case, he's probably primary care has got way too many people to deal with, way too many things on his plate. He doesn't have the time. She doesn't have the time to learn about hormone replacement necessarily. Because you can tell 1.5 milligram troche divided by 4 days a week, like that's something that you and I would never do, right? Just ever do that. It just seems a little bit. I can understand reducing the dose from a woman that's been on hormones for, 7-8 years. So you think you're sort of doing the right thing by reducing the dose there. But, it just seems like, not a lot of good thought behind that kind of a prescription necessarily. And then now here, here she is and she's in her early 60s, probably still very spry, probably still very active, trying to live her life. And she just doesn't feel very good. How do you deal with that? How does she deal with that in her own life? How does she find those kind of solutions and find those answers?
That's why she's looking for answers. Something you said, I do feel like, 2024, that there is kind of a revolution, not necessarily for women's health. I mean, it should be, heart disease, bone density, cancer, women's health. But I do feel like there's more like maybe women, like a women's wellness revolution, because women don't want to go through the symptoms of perimenopause and menopause. How many years ago was it when a woman had problems with PMS, or they didn't even know what perimenopause was, or hormones, as they call it, the change, or so many women would get hysterectomies thinking that was going to fix things. And then antidepressants. I mean, when I first got into practice in 2004, I don't know how many women were offered antidepressants and benzodiazepines for their menopausal symptoms. So I feel like now here we are in 2024 that, women want to feel well, they want to feel healthy. And I can understand the other, that other side of this GP, he or she might be seeing lovely Donna walk through her door and she looks great because she's working on her own health. And Donna's saying, well, I'm not sleeping well. I have a little atrophy. I feel weird. I don't, I'm kind of tired. Donna's going to get blown off because she's not somebody that's coming in with maybe their fasting glucose is at 220, or they have, rheumatoid arthritis, or they have some kind of real major, issues that are going to be life involving, where really also Donna is just as important as somebody else with these chronic diseases, because she wants to feel good too.
Well, and also too, some of the examples you use there's very specific medications to prescribe for each of those, right? You got a cholesterol problem, take a statin drug. You got a blood pressure problem, take a couple of medications. Those ones are easy for doctors to treat because there's very specific prescriptions to prescribe. True. If there is, and that's honestly the entire healthcare system, if there is a disease, there is a drug to match it. You prescribe that drug and you're good. Okay, that's sort of ridiculous. Now it works in a lot of ways, but it's just so does not work in a lot of ways, especially for chronic problems. And in our practice, we're trying to do the same thing. We're trying to help people in the short term and help them prevent and stave off age-related disease in the long term. That's really what I think the benefit of hormone replacement is over time, is you get the short-term relief so you don't feel like you're going crazy. You're not miserable on a day-to-day basis, because we've talked about it too, from an aging perspective, there is a huge change. And I see it all over social media. These women that are embracing the aging process, they're in their 50s, 60s, 70s, they're exercising, they're living these crazy active, lifestyles, actively, working on their health and longevity, thriving at an age that, 25 years ago would have been unheard of, but we also have another segment of the population that is sort of going downhill real fast, right? So you have these kind of two polar ends of the spectrum Some that are struggling with those chronic problems, partially because of how the healthcare system is set up. You and I work outside of the healthcare system exclusively, right? So we have sort of the freedom to do what is in the, and always what is in the best interest of the patient. Well, we always try to do what's in the best interest of the patient, because that's just what we do. I mean, that's just what we do it and why we do it that way. And I'm not saying that Donna's doctor or other doctors are not doing things in the best interest of their patients. I think a lot of them try to do that. I think it just becomes challenging in the 21st century healthcare landscape.
No, and that's true. I mean, even you as practitioners, I know I have quite a few like MD doctors, you know, general practitioners that are they have a patient and I'll tell them this is the dose that your patient should be taking because they know that they don't know, you know, a lot about bioidentical hormones and dosing and how they should be taking it. So they want my advice to be able to treat their patient. I do that all the time. So I do think that, you know, things are changing, you know, as we're moving forward, but I am truly amazed at how many people are willing to do the research for themselves to learn about this.
Well,
hence listening to this podcast right now, right?
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, and that's why we're doing the podcast, because we know that there is a gap in the information that's out there. You cannot, Donna's question, she could try to Google that. You're not going to find anything about what she's asking in this question. You can Google and YouTube and look for days and days, weeks and weeks, and you're not going to find an answer to that question. You know, you're just not. And if anything, you're going to have to pay another doctor thousands and thousands of dollars to get an answer to that question. You know, so that's why we started this podcast a long time ago, with that idea in mind. Now we're on a really good run right now. We're doing lots of episodes. We got lots of questions coming in. We are in the process of launching a community in 2024. We don't exactly know when the launch date's going to be, but we're thinking it's going to be somewhere towards the late summer, early fall is kind of what we're planning for. And again, it's just an expansion of this podcast into more of a cohesive group of some sort, because, you know, we feel like there's a gap there. And I've looked around for, you know, communities like that that really don't exist. And that's where this idea came from quite a while ago. And now we're sort of at a place where we're sort of ready to do that. So on our website, there is, you know, we have the Ask a Doctor tab to ask your questions, but there is a wait list on there to join. So if you feel like you want to be part of the community, just to kind of raise your hand and say, I'm interested, go to our website, join the wait list. From there, we can, you know, kind of keep you up to date on the progress of that community, and, you know, can continue the conversation from there.
Absolutely. And that's one thing that I think would be interesting, because we get all these questions from these listeners, which we love, and then we answer the question. But let's say for Donna, you know, what we're recommending, we're saying, you know, keep taking your oral progesterone, may want to change it to a sustained release to help with her sleep, do a BIEST, the estriol estradiol combination, do it twice a day, use it as a cream, raise it up, and do an estriol vaginally. I would say somebody asking this question, that's what I would recommend. But let's say 3 or 4 months down the road, I want to know how she's doing. You know, Donna, if you're listening, of course, we change everybody's names. I want to know if you do that, how are you doing on that? And then at that point, there might need to be some little tweaks too. So I think having that community where we can have a group of women that are interested and we're all learning together, where we can all interact together and see how we, you know, how we're doing, how we're progressing as we're going through life.
Yeah. But it can be done sort of at scale.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's private, you know, yeah. It's private. Nobody else has access, you know, to your personal information kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, now, you said one last closing thought just came to my mind, and we'll wrap it up. So you said, we both agree, kind of a BIEST cream. Where would you kind of start that dose at?
See, so right now her dose, let me get those glasses on, is her dose right now got reduced, and she's really on a very low amount of BIEST. Is I would initially want to put her probably more on maybe even like 2 milligrams of BIEST, 2 to 3 milligrams twice a day, but we may need to work our way up there. So it's like, you don't want to, you're already in the shallow end. You don't want to jump in the deep end, even though you know that's where you want to get to. We probably have to work her BIEST dose up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So give me a number.
Oh, I would probably start with like an 80-20, 80% estriol, 20% estradiol, and do that at more like maybe like 4 milligrams. And then she would do 2 milligrams in the morning, 2 milligrams in the evening as a transdermal cream that she would apply to her thigh. Then we would want to run some blood work, see how she actually feels, and then think about if we want to raise that up to like 5 or 6. Because, you know, I think for her, and then switching that Prometrium to an actual sustained release progesterone capsule, 100 milligrams, I think she would sleep great with that rather than a Prometrium. I think that would be a really nice start. And then, you know, maybe even checking her other hormones, checking her testosterone, checking her DHEA sulfate, checking her pregnenolone. There's so many things we can do. So we could go on forever. But that's where I would love to hear, you know, any of you listeners that have written in a question and we've answered, you know, how are you doing? In fact, we have a few people that will do an episode on replies.
Yeah, we didn't. We did one episode, and then she actually wrote back and gave us an update.
We'll do that on a different episode.
Yeah, which I thought was great that she actually took the time to do that. So, I think this one's good. Yeah. I think there's a lot of really, really key pieces of information there, or, you know, things to kind of tease apart. And this is really, like you said, a few things. There's, you know, the longevity of how long you can be on the hormones, the dosing itself. There's a few things there that can be just changed just a slight bit. And it could, you know, make I'm hoping a big difference for Donna, you know, and anyone else that's listening that's in a similar situation. So, any final comments? Are we good on this one?
No, I think this is great.
Okay. Until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Progress Your Health podcast. If you like what you've heard on this podcast, please give us a positive review on iTunes. This allows us to spread our message, grow our audience, and help more people around the world. For more information, visit our website at progressyourhealth.com.